Channel open. Welcome back to Weekly Trek, a proud member of the Tricorder Transmissions podcast network and presented in partnership with TrekCore.com. I am your host, Alex Perry.
What's today's date? The date.
Today's show was recorded on January 7th, 2022, and is current through the Star Trek Prodigy episode Kobayashi, so beware of spoilers. And if you are in one of the regions where Star Trek Discovery or Star Trek Prodigy has not yet aired, and you are trying to stay spoiler-free, be sure to check the episode article on TrekCore for time codes for each of our stories tonight in order to avoid them. All right, let's get into the show.
Good day, Voyager, and welcome to A Briefing with Neelix. Catchy title, isn't it?
Weekly Trek is a regular news show covering the biggest stories from the Star Trek franchise. We are in a new golden age of Star Trek. There are multiple television shows in production, possibly more on the way, and enough merchandise to fill the Bajoran wormhole. So stick with me and I'll help you sort the real facts from a lot of the Dominion propaganda that you'll find online. But I can't do this alone, and my guest this week is returning guest and co-host of the Promenade Merchants podcast. It's David Majors. David, welcome back to Weekly Trek.
Thank you so much, Alex. Hello, Weekly Trek listeners and fans, and thank you for having me aboard.
It is my pleasure. Well, David, you know the drill. I want to know something that's got you feeling excited about Star Trek at the moment. What's got you moving at Warp 10?
Well, I imagine that it's already going to be discussed, but I think everyone is raving about the return of Star Trek Prodigy and the aforementioned episode Kobayashi. Also, just for the sake of it, also, Star Trek Discovery Season 4, we've talked about it at length on Promenade Merchants, and most specifically, Kobayashi Maru, and how now we're seeing more things opening up with the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, I mean, what a terrific episode of Star Trek Prodigy it was this week. So much fun. What a lovely and touching homage to Rene Aubergenois, to James Doohan. Fabulous having Gates back recording new dialogue. Actually had the opportunity to interview Aaron Waltke, who was the writer of the episode yesterday alongside Jen Tift for TrekCore.com. That interview will be coming out later this week as a special supplemental episode of Weekly Trek, where we talk much more about this episode and Prodigy so far and all the characters' journeys. So make sure you tune into that. But yeah, I mean, this just was, I mean, just a fabulous episode. And in addition to, I thought, you know, what was really terrific about it, and obviously this is the thing I'm feeling good about Star Trek this week as well, is, or rather was, the way in which, yes, it was, there was a lot of fan service in the episode, but it was fan service that was done in a way that advances the arc of one of the main characters of the show in Dal, right? This was a really important episode for his character to kind of find his sort of command style and, you know, learn what it means to undertake a no-win scenario. And there was a ton of fun along the way for, you know, longtime Trekkies like you or me. But at the same time, it was still an important episode for the actual characters of this show, which I think was just very artfully done.
Agreed, especially in the case of Dal, because Hologram Janeway said in the beginning that she didn't think that Dal was quite ready for the Kobayashi Maru exam. And lo and behold, she was right.
Yeah, right.
Because he really didn't understand until several attempts. And sometimes you need to know your limitations and learn from your mistakes. And sometimes when you're young and energetic, you don't always listen. Sometimes you are stubborn, and sometimes lessons have to be learned the hard way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it just, this episode, for that reason, I think was really well put together and will serve the character and his arc very well. So yeah, what a terrific episode to come back to Star Trek Prodigy with and now kind of see out the last four episodes of the season. And I mean, you know, that it's such a packed episode that a lot of people haven't really even started yet talking about the reveal at the very end of the episode that Captain Chakotay was the captain of the USS Protostar. So like, you know, it's just, it's, I think, you know, this is a real turning point for the season, and I'm expecting a big next few episodes.
Absolutely. Completely agreed.
All right. Well, with that, let's turn to the week's top stories.
There's a war going on, and I'm a reporter.
Well, just prior to Christmas, Viacom CBS made the surprising announcement that Star Trek Discovery's fourth season would be taking a mid-season break, much like Star Trek Prodigy has just done, that will delay the back half of season four until the first 10 episodes of Prodigy's first season have aired. Following December 30th's seventh episode of Discovery season four, But to Connect, the show is now on hiatus until February 10th, when it will return with new episodes. That means that the season finale is now expected, assuming 13-episode season, to air on March the 17th. But don't worry too much, there is still new Star Trek to enjoy between now and February 10th with the return of Star Trek Prodigy. The sixth episode of the show's first season, which we were just talking about, premiered this week. That's January 6th, and will run through February 3rd. So our unbroken streak of new Star Trek remains, but Viacom CBS have apparently decided not to let the two shows run concurrently, as had been originally planned. What the mid-season break for Star Trek Discovery means for the upcoming Star Trek Picard season premiere of season two is unclear at the moment. Picard was supposed to premiere in February, but it does seem unlikely that it will overlap with Discovery, and it may be pushed back to March so that it'll be last four episodes of Prodigy, last six or seven episodes of Discovery, and then we move directly into Picard from that, which would put it in March. David, what was your reaction to the news that Star Trek Discovery season four would have a mid-season break?
I was pretty dejected about it, to be completely frank, because I think that this season of Star Trek Discovery season four has been an excellent season of television, more than just an excellent season of Star Trek. It's been a fantastic season of television, this season of Discovery. And the break, albeit softened with the return of Prodigy, in the case of Discovery being so strong this time around, it really threw me for a loop, I'm going to be honest. However, at the same time, I understand, and I've said this before, I understand what Viacom CBS is doing. They want people to keep those Paramount Plus subscriptions, and this is a great way to do it, because I think it's already been well documented that Star Trek has sold one or two Paramount Plus subscriptions, and for it to have a continual Star Trek series airing, that's good for the streaming service, that's good for the Star Trek franchise, and it is a calculated strategic move that I understand. And I said recently that February 10th feels like it's all the way in the Gamma Quadrant without a wormhole, but I am going to practice patience. And with the return of Prodigy, the blow has been softened for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly something going on behind the scenes that, you know, they don't want to talk about. My guess is post-production on something is taking longer than it's supposed to. That being, you know, likely Star Trek Prodigy for the reason why it got its mid-season break, likely Star Trek Discovery for the reason why it got its mid-season break. Maybe even Star Trek Picard season two is taking a bit longer than expected to put together, which is why they're kind of like, you know, pushing the timeline of new Star Trek now by staggering Prodigy and Discovery out until March to give an extra month for Picard to be finished. That's also a possibility. Or maybe it's just they decided it was a bad idea to run two Star Trek shows at the same time. And I don't necessarily think that is a wrong position, from the sense that if this was a week in which we had gotten what was going to be a very big episode of Discovery and this big episode of Star Trek Prodigy, would there have been nearly as much focus on Prodigy as there has been in the last 48 hours and on that episode of Kobayashi if you'd had Star Trek Discovery as well, and, you know, pushing more towards finding out who the species behind, who species 10C are? So I actually don't think it's a bad thing for them to have set it up in such a way where you just have one show on at a time. It's a little weird that they started Prodigy and then they started Discovery and then they stopped Prodigy and then they stopped Discovery and then they restarted Prodigy and then they restarted Discovery, right? Maybe they should have just done it where it was like, well, we're going to do either Prodigy or we're going to do Discovery and run those through and then play the next one. But that clearly was not the thinking, you know, 3-4 months ago, but it definitely is the thinking now. But to my mind, not a bad thing. I mean, obviously, does it suck to have to wait another month for Star Trek Discovery, especially because it left out on a bit of a cliffhanger and we really want to find out how that resolves? For sure. You know, not my favorite thing in the world to have to wait, but we're still getting new Star Trek every week. And we do, as a result, have this opportunity to savor Prodigy and what we're seeing in Prodigy every week. Of course, we'll cop to the fact that, you know, that's really only for us in North America, that if you're outside North America, you technically don't have access to Prodigy, though I'm fairly certain most intellectual fans are finding a way to get their hands on it and enjoy it at the same time as everybody else. But yeah, it's sort of, you know, my guess is we're not going to have two series simultaneously. We thought that was maybe going to happen for a few weeks here, and now that's it's not. But it, you know, I think there are good things to take out of it too.
I am okay with having Star Trek airing continuously. I've said this on Promenade before, and with it all projecting to Picard season two, I'm just going to whisper it out into the ether because it's been, in my opinion, a little quiet. What about the production, Alex, on Strange New Worlds?
Yeah, I mean, open question, right? When's that coming? When are we going to see a full trailer for that show? We've not seen anything yet.
It's been very quiet on Strange New Worlds, hasn't it? It's been very quiet.
It has. My guess is, though, that there's nothing untoward about that. It's just because there's a lot of other Star Trek on at the moment, and they don't want to unnecessarily kind of spin up a publicity machine for a show that's still, you know, 4 or 5 months away when there are shows that are on right now that kind of need the publicity more. But yeah, I mean, you know, there is sort of this question of like publicity for the show has got to come soon. A trailer has got to come soon because theoretically season one is probably going to air within 6, 7, 8 months of us speaking today. And aside from the character reveal video, we haven't gotten anything so far.
But we'll still have plenty of Star Trek to talk about.
Oh, yes, we will. That is for sure. Well, the extraordinary rise of the Omicron variant of COVID-19 in the United States appears to have impacted filming of Star Trek Picard's third season this week, as more than 50 crew members from the 450-strong production tested positive for COVID-19 on Monday. According to Deadline, both cast and crew members were impacted by the positive test results, which saw filming temporarily suspended. The series showrunner Terry Metalis tweeted that filming resumed today. That's Friday, January the 7th, after a 4-day suspension. Deadline has reported that Sir Patrick Stewart was not among the members of the cast and crew who tested positive for COVID-19, and we wish all the best to those who did test positive for a speedy recovery. I think I tweeted something like, you know, I hope the cast and crew of Star Trek Picard have the same experience as any Starfleet crew whenever they encounter a letter of the Greek alphabet, which is thoroughly kick its ass. David, it's kind of crazy that so many members of the Picard crew could test positive for COVID all at once, don't you think? And yet at the same time, given how much everybody is testing positive for COVID, probably not all that surprising.
The Omicron variant, Alex, is really, really something. I do not recall a variant of COVID-19 spreading as widely and as quickly as the Omicron variant. And you remember with season three of Star Trek Discovery, they had to postpone production in season three for a little while. Mm-hmm. So there is a precedent for this. It seems like Viacom and CBS have good practices in place. They're keeping everyone safe as best they can. And that's really all you can ask for. It seems like all levels of the production have contingency plans. And of course, most importantly, Patrick Stewart, not just because of who he is and his standing within the franchise, but the fact that, yes, Patrick Stewart is an older gentleman. And because the virus has had more adverse effects in older people, that is something that has to be taken into consideration. So by all accounts, they had a plan in case this happened. They were prepared and they resumed production after only 4 days. So it seems like they had things as best as they could under control.
Yeah. And of course, you know, let's acknowledge also, this is not an issue that's unique to Star Trek Picard. There are lots of Hollywood television productions right now that are currently sort of seeing a spike in COVID cases and having to suspend filming as a result, as this, you know, COVID variant rips through all parts of society, apparently all at once, all at the same time. So, but, you know, encouraging that the production was only ultimately down for only 4 days before they got filming back underway. And I think Terry Metalis gave us a little bit of a treat with his tweet announcing the return to production, because we've talked about it on this show a couple of times. He has sort of been tweeting pictures out from the filming of season three over the last few months since it started. And it's very much sort of like Starfleet really chic, you know, sort of pictures of L cars and replicators and hypo sprays. And a lot of them have been these L cars panels. And today, the picture that he tweeted when he said, you know, don't worry about it, we're back to filming today, was quite a distinctive shape. It looked very much like it was the outline for the saucer section of a starship. It was sort of a circle, reminding me a little bit of an ambassador class kind of saucer. But our first glimpse at, you know, it does seem very, very strongly that Star Trek Picard Season 3 is predominantly, mostly, somewhat significantly set aboard a classic late 24th century Starfleet ship. That may be a new design, it may be a familiar design, but like, he's tweeted enough of these pictures of enough different sets and enough different kind of props that, like, initially when he had started tweeting them out, I was like, oh, well, maybe this ship just shows up in the season premiere. And he took a bunch of pictures and now he's just sort of like dripping them out. But they only filmed on that for like one episode and then they're off, you know, back on non-Starfleet ships. But like, it's just a lot. We've seen what looks like a sick bay. We've seen what looks like a piece of a transporter room, a piece of a corridor. You know, you don't build that many sets if you're not planning on using them in a significant way. And so also there are a couple more kind of, you know, soft announcements today of previous members of the Star Trek art and production departments who are familiar names from the Berman era of Star Trek. It turns out, are back working on Star Trek Picard, right? We knew about a few already, Doug Drexler, Michael Kuda, but today there was a little bit of back and forth that indicated that Jeff Mandel, people may know, most famously, is the creator of the Star Trek Star Charts book, which in my mind is the sort of seminal sort of Star Charts book. Larry Nemechek's Star Charts sort of updated Jeff Mandel's pieces, but it was an update of what Jeff did. Jeff was the one who really created a lot of that work in the first place. And he's working on Star Trek Picard too.
Alex, do we have word on Jeffrey Combs or no?
So far, only people from behind the camera. We don't yet know much about people in front of the camera, but like, it was something else I saw today was Gates McFadden. You know, people have obviously been talking a lot because she recorded new Crush dialogue for the Prodigy episode this week. And somebody said, okay, well, now we've had Crush from Prodigy, we just need her back on Picard. And she's tweeted something like, well, keep those fingers crossed, which of course she might just say is a very, you know, that's just a very sort of neutral thing to say, doesn't indicate to you one way or another whether Crush is going to appear in Picard or not. But except to say that at this point in time, so we know that Picard season 3 started filming sometime in September. The expectation, as far as everybody knows at this stage, is that 3 is probably going to be the last season. That this show was only going to run for 3 seasons. And so, you know, and they're filming 2 and 3 back to back. And then that will be it for Star Trek Picard, which means they're probably halfway through filming season 3 right now. You know, maybe they're on episode 4, maybe they're on episode 5. But it certainly means they know what's going to happen before the end of this show. And they know whether Beverly Crusher is going to be in it or not. And as a result, Gates McFadden knows whether she's going to be in it or not. And so her choosing to tweet a keep your fingers crossed tweet, which definitely is kind of like a keep hope alive tweet, to me says, and of course I'm throwing a theory in right here in the newsy part of the episode.
Throw it, do it.
That I think you don't, given where they are in filming, given we think this is the end, given that she must know by now whether she has a role in it or not, I think that says to me that Beverly Crusher's in Star Trek Picard season 3, or I mean, maybe season 2. I think she said she's not in season 2. So, you know, that she's in season 3, because otherwise, why would you get people's hopes up like that if you knew it wasn't going to happen?
Agreed. And we've gotten a little bit of something from just about every member of the cast of The Next Generation. And I think that will provide all the more excitement for the future of Star Trek Picard.
Well, we hopefully will have not too long to wait until season 2, and we will find out what that season's all about. And then all eyes on season 3, which seems like it's very exciting from the team they've put together. Well, Paramount Plus is now the exclusive streaming home for the complete catalog of Star Trek series in the United States after the classic Star Trek shows departed from both Amazon Prime and Hulu at the end of 2021. With the departure of all the series from both services in the US, Paramount Plus is now the only streaming service on which you can access Star Trek, Star Trek Voyager, Star Trek Enterprise, the animated series, and of course the newer shows, which have always been exclusive to Paramount Plus. Star Trek The Next Generation and Star Trek Deep Space Nine are still available on Netflix in the US, US for the foreseeable future. The move, which was hinted at a number of months ago by senior Viacom CBS executives who have talked about a shifting strategy around licensing the company's IP to other services, is likely designed to encourage more signups for Paramount Plus and to lock Star Trek fans into year-round subscriptions. So far, all the shows remain on streaming services outside of the United States. It's just inside the US that it's gone from Amazon Prime and Hulu, though I would venture a guess that once Paramount Plus launches in more territories, I expect that will likely change as well. David, what's your opinion on the move by Viacom CBS to consolidate Star Trek onto Paramount Plus?
I'm of two minds of it, Alex. On one hand, I understand the consolidation and wanting more people to come to Paramount Plus. That is a no-brainer. That is their streaming platform. It is their brand. Of course, you understand that. I guess my issue is, however, is the shows that they have on Netflix still are kind of the most popular Star Trek shows, but they don't really have a way of offering a gateway into the rest of the franchise. They have the two shows that most everybody knows, but what if someone with Netflix wants to quickly go to Voyager or quickly maybe check out Enterprise? What are they going to do? And I feel like that might be a mistake on Viacom CBS's part, because you want, and I believe I said this on a previous episode that I was invited on, that there were ways to watch as much Star Trek as you possibly could want on various platforms. And now that's not the case. And I wonder if that's a savvy move on the part of CBS Viacom.
Well, my guess is from their perspective, you know, I've seen criticism of the move that says that, well, if you remove all of the Star Trek shows completely from the streaming services, then no one's going to stumble on them, right? Because nobody stumbles on a Paramount Plus subscription. It's the smallest streaming service. You're only going and getting Paramount Plus if you're actively searching. You want to get Paramount Plus because there's something specific on it you want to watch, which means that you're sort of constricting your base of potential customers just to the people who already know and like Star Trek and aren't yet Paramount Plus subscribers, which is probably over time a diminishing number of people.
It's getting smaller and smaller.
Right. But the move to leave The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine on Netflix, and I'll be interested to see if in the future maybe one or two shows also pop up on Prime or on Hulu. I think they're kind of thinking behind the strategy is, well, there's 800 episodes, right? And we ideally want to create fans who want to watch all 800 episodes. And in a perfect world, we would like them to watch all 800 episodes on Paramount Plus. But since a lot of people aren't just going to stumble across Paramount Plus unless they already know to look for it, let's license out 178 of those episodes, or if Deep Space Nine, multiply that by two, to kind of serve as a teaser, right? Start watching The Next Generation. You get to the end of The Next Generation. Oh, I really want more Star Trek. I really want to watch more Star Trek. Oh, it's all on Paramount Plus. Oh, well, I really want to watch the rest of this franchise. I need to go get myself a Paramount Plus subscription. And then you get the subscription and you complete the franchise that way. I think to me, that feels like the sort of savvy way of doing it would be, you know, Amazon Prime gets Enterprise for a while and Hulu gets Voyager for a while and Netflix gets Next Generation and Deep Space Nine for a while. And they sort of, you know, they rotate them out. So Next Generation and Deep Space Nine would be on Netflix for 8 months. And then those will both leave and Voyager and the original series will come on. And so if you were that kind of consumer, you were like, I do not want to pay for a Paramount Plus subscription. Just wait it out. Eventually the shows will show up on your stream. So they won't be available all the time, just like they do with the movies right now, right? The movies kind of come and go from the different, or they have historically kind of come and gone from the different streaming services. You never knew which ones you were going to have available at any given time, but you always knew there was like going to be one or two at least that you could, you know, access as part of those streaming subscriptions. And it feels to me like that's what in a perfect world they would want to be doing with Star Trek, is give people the opportunity to stumble on a something, right? Stumble on Star Trek Voyager and then go, I want to watch the original series. And in order to do that, I've got to get Paramount Plus. And so that converts you into a Paramount Plus subscriber. And then you're accessing the rest of the franchise and doing it through Paramount Plus, which is obviously where Viacom CBS wants people's attention to be for these shows and not on Netflix, Amazon Prime, and Hulu.
Which makes sense, given Star Trek Prodigy, of course, airing on Nickelodeon. If you're watching it on Nickelodeon, that might open up someone to watch Star Trek Voyager, and in which case they can see that on Paramount Plus as well. And all of this really ties into getting people to subscribe to Paramount Plus. And I understand the strategy. I am very curious as to how successful it will be.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. That's the $64 million question. It's probably even more money than that, right? Is that question of how successful is it going to be? And, you know, it remains to be seen. Does it end up backfiring, right? As some of the critics of the move have said, well, you're sort of turning off the spigot of creating new Star Trek fans if they can't sort of stumble across all of this stuff and get access to it. So yeah, we'll just have to, like, what's that line between you really want people to come over to Paramount Plus, but you need to be making more Star Trek fans, and just keeping everything on Paramount Plus is maybe not the way that you do that. So I suppose it's something where, you know, if the experiment is unsuccessful, they can easily reverse it and just go out and do new licensing deals with Netflix and with Amazon Prime, who I'm sure would be thrilled to have the shows back, because it's a you know, really lucrative library and a lot of episodes. But yeah, I guess it's hey, they want to try this for a while and see how it goes, and maybe it'll be successful and maybe it won't. But it, you know, I think, and it sucks, right? It sucks. I enjoyed having access to all of the shows on Netflix and Amazon Prime and on Paramount Plus. And, you know, I just sort of flip between them. If I was doing a rewatch of something, I would doing it on Paramount Plus, but if I wanted to go and watch episodes out of order, I would go do that on Amazon Prime, just so I wasn't screwing up the, like, watch next thing on Paramount Plus. And now I can't do that anymore. It all has to be done through Paramount Plus. But, you know, it's been that way for a decade, and it was a great decade of having everything available, and it was probably going to change, and it's now changed, and it sucks that it's changed, but hey, there's still a place where you can get them all, and most people who listen to this show are almost certainly subscribed to Paramount Plus or whatever the streaming service is in your country that offers the new shows. So it's not ultimately that big of an impact for anybody who does that. Well, and lastly this week, IDW Comics have announced a new comic series tying into Star Trek Discovery. Star Trek Discovery Adventures in the 23rd Century will be a 4-issue miniseries by veteran Star Trek comics author Mike Johnston and Discovery TV writer Kirsten Beyer that will shine a spotlight on 4 members of the Discovery crew. The first issue will focus on Cleveland Booker's Cat Grudge, with subsequent tales centered around Helm Officer Kayla Detmer, the Saurian Science Officer Linus, and Adir. Tau. The series is scheduled to be released in the first half of 2022. We don't have an exact date yet for the first issue. David, are you a fan of Star Trek comics? And is this a series you think you might be interested in checking out?
I will be checking this out, because I have been looking for an entry point for Star Trek comics. And I love everything that comes from IDW, most specifically the Sonic the Hedgehog comic, very near and dear to my heart. And the Star Trek comics have always kind of been a bit more in the TOS era. So I'm definitely really interested in seeing something that is from the current era and with the characters on the Discovery, because since Discovery has started, this is something that fans have always asked for, wanting to see more of the crew of the Discovery on their own adventures. Detmer, Owosakun, Reese, Dalton, all of them, Bryce, the entire crew of the Discovery, people have wanted to see and hear more from them. And now we have that opportunity. And most notably, Adira Tal. This is going to be a great spot for them, because one, it will be a standalone story, and two, it will also coincide with Discovery currently airing. And I think that for me personally, right now is a great starting point for Adira Tal to show some real depth and some real character growth. And I'm really looking forward to their character arc going forward. Also, Alex, most notably, a comic book shop just opened about 5 minutes away from my house, and best believe I will be going there and asking them about this.
Well, there you go. It's a nice way of supporting a local business as well as getting some good Star Trek stories. Yeah, I'm really pleased about this. I've been disappointed in the last really two and a half years that they've not had more kind of tie-ins to the current shows. The last one we got was the Star Trek Picard comics tie-in, which gave the origin story for Laris and Jaban. And that was like November to February 2020. Yeah, which is now 2 years ago since, I mean, there's obviously been other Star Trek comics since then, the EF5 series and some of the others, the Star Trek Deep Space Nine Odo series, but nothing that's tied into the current Star Trek shows. And I have sort of been disappointed that there hadn't been anything, and so glad that they're finally getting back to doing a something. And, you know, this seems like a cool way of giving some extra backstory to some of these characters who otherwise maybe aren't getting a ton of screen time, right? Like, you know, like Crunch, honestly, you know, it's just a kind of a cat who's on screen in certain scenes. It doesn't necessarily make sense that we find out Grudge's origin story in the show, but it would be, that's the kind of thing that's perfect fodder for a comic. So yeah, really pleased to see them doing this again. I hope they do more of this. It'd be nice to get a Picard season 2 tie-in comic. It'd be nice to get some of the new shows too, right? Like Lower Decks and Prodigy. We've got nothing in the sort of published realm on either of those two shows. And, you know, Lower Decks has now been around for a year and a half, so it's plenty of time for them to have come up with and put into production something, and we haven't seen it yet. So yeah, this is a good thing. Glad that Mike Johnston and Kirsten Beyer are back doing Star Trek comics tying into the modern shows, and excited to see where they take it.
Agreed.
All right, well, we've talked about the facts, and now let's speculate on what's going to happen in the future of Star Trek.
You make some very good points, Captain, but it's still all speculation and theory.
So each week, I and my guests give you a wish or theory we're nurturing about any of the shows or the future of the franchise. So David, let's hear your theory or wish for this week.
My wish is, and I've said this on multiple podcasts, I am an anime fan. I'm a big anime fan.
Yes, sir.
And I am aching with jealousy over another certain star franchise out there because...
Visions, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I want Star Trek and CBS Viacom, if the prophets will it, I want CBS Viacom to find a way to talk with Japanese animation studios and give us some Star Trek anime. That's what I want.
That'd be cool. And hey, I mean, there's been this big push into animated Star Trek with Lower Decks and with Prodigy. There's no reason that it should stop there. Anime is a massively popular genre. It has massive international appeal for a franchise that needs a little help, particularly, I think, in reaching audiences in Asia. And yeah, I think that'd be a terrific way of giving a new platform for Star Trek and a new voice for Star Trek as well, right? Particularly if they take the Star Wars Visions route, where it's not sort of Americans creating American stories that are then animated by Japanese animation houses, but they really sort of gave those Japanese animation houses, they said, you know, here's the Star Wars concept, be imaginative, be creative, go nuts with it, do whatever, you know, sort of tell a story that's authentically true to the way that you would create any other original anime production that you were doing. And there's some really terrifically original, innovative, inventive ideas that an American writer's room never would have come up with in a million years. And Star Wars is all the better for its existence. And Star Trek could benefit from that as well. A bit more of an international flavor of contributing to the sort of ideas behind the franchise and what it means. David, I think this is a terrific, terrific wish.
And anime fans out there that might be curious, that there is a precedent for this, because a anime franchise very near and dear to my heart, Alex, Mobile Suit Gundam, that has been around now for over 40 years, is called the Star Trek of Japan. So that there is room for precedence and there's room for growth for the franchise. You brought up Star Wars Visions, also the Animatrix.
Yep.
With the Matrix coming back. I think there's definitely something there. Wow, that's a blast from the past. You know, I watched them all recently and the Animatrix is still really good. It really holds up. And I want that for Star Trek. I really, really do.
Yeah. I'm totally with you. I think that's great. Yeah, they should definitely do that. And hey, they have borrowed good ideas from the Star Wars franchise before, and so hopefully they will add this to their list of things to beg, borrow, and steal. All right. So my theory is it's another Star Trek Discovery theory. So I think on the last episode where I gave a theory, my theory was that the creator of the DMA was Future Guy. Well, now two episodes later, that's almost certainly not the case. But now, you know, we sort of have this information, not a ton of information about this species 10C, the sort of Starfleet label they've given to the creator of the DMA. But now I have a new theory about who species 10C is. And the nice thing about Discovery now being off the air for a month is this theory gets to live out there for a month. And I won't necessarily be proved wrong immediately next week or by the time people even hear this episode. So, and this is another crazy theory. I have no idea if this is right or not. And my evidence is scant.
The crazier, the better.
Yeah,
the right. Crazier, the better.
So I think species 10C is the race who created and sent the cetacean probe to Earth in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. And my reason for thinking that is just one word in one episode, which is not the last episode, but to connect with episode 406. And I'm blanking on the episode title at the moment. The one where they go inside the DMA and they're trapped in the sort of subspace pocket and it's closing in on them and they can't get out. So we know about species 10C is that they, A, they created the DMA, B, they come from outside of the galaxy, and C, when the Discovery gets trapped inside this sort of, you know, inside the DMA, the way they get themselves out is by using sonar, which is very sort of specifically called out in the episode as, you know, we're going to use sonar and ping our way out. And it's this old, you know, 21st century technology that they used to use at sea. There's just this very, you know, they sort of dwell on it for just a moment too long in my mind for it not to hold potentially some significance. And that is sort of one of the kind of big mysteries of Star Trek, right? That the franchise has never sort of revisited. Where did the cetacean probe from Star Trek IV come from? What, you know, what's its relationship with the humpback whales of Earth? What's the species? What's their motivation? Who knows? But maybe the species that sent the whale probe is species 10C, and now they have some other, you know, thing they're trying to find or look for in the Milky Way galaxy. And rather than a giant probe that sucks the power out of everything, they've sent a massive anomaly into the galaxy to figure out what it is. So yeah, my current working theory is that species 10C is the same race who created the probe that was at the heart of Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. David, what do you think?
That is a whale of a theory, Alex. I respect it. I respect that it would be a great callback to Star Trek history. I'm someone who usually personally leans on the idea of a new species or something that hasn't come along in a long, long time. I really enjoyed seeing the Orions and the Emerald Chain in season 3 of Discovery. So I think that your idea is certainly not out of the realm of possibility. I like it. I think that there might be something there. It's not totally crazy. I would be very excited if it were something wholly new that we have not seen before. And in entirely new race, an entirely new species, an entirely new universe, like Torka was actually talking about, like he was actually telling the truth the whole time. That would be really something. But this idea, it's very fan servicey, but I like it. I like it a lot.
And just like the Future Guy prediction from 3 weeks ago, whenever it was, I think that's the reason why it's not. Honestly, I'm with you. Discovery's bag has not been doing, you know, like season 3, who caused the burn? It was not the Romulans or the Cardassians or the Borg or species 8472 or any of the kind of, you know, theories that were flying around about who from the sort of Star Trek franchise could be responsible for it. It ended up being a Kelpian. It was something that was, it was a concept that was uniquely specific to Star Trek Discovery. And my guess is that the origin of the DMA, just as you said, is going to be exactly the same, right? Something that's generated by the show that potentially ties into something about Discovery, but is not just like a, oh, it's the Future Guy or the Iconians or, well, no, they've said it's not the Iconians, Future Guy or the Cetacean probes people, or the Kelvins, or, you know, the people who were looking for the Tox Utat in Captain's Holiday also came from outside the galaxy. I guess it could be any of those things. It just, that doesn't feel like Discovery, and it doesn't feel like the way that they tell stories. But hey, the fun of it is trying to come up with, you know, what's going on, because that's also what they want us to do, right? They purposefully don't give us this information so that we kind of follow along the story and have an opportunity to theorize and stuff. So yeah, for now, it's the whale probe people. Next week, maybe it'll be somebody else. No, actually, having said that, next week, the theory is going to be about the whole Captain Chakotay and why the Diviner was looking for the protostar 17 years ago during TNG.
Maybe it's all connected.
It could be. It could be. It sure could. Do you have a theory or a wish for Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds, Lower Decks, or Prodigy that you'd like to share? Tweet them to me at Weekly Trek, or email them to me at weeklytrek@thetricordertransmissions.com, and I might feature your theory in a future episode. Well, that's all the time we've got for this episode of Weekly Trek. Thank you so much to my guest, David Majors, for joining me today. David, how can people contact you if they want to continue the conversation?
You can follow me on Twitter at CallMeDJM. That's just my initials. Just CallMeDJM. That's my Twitter handle, where you can see me talking about Star Trek and the various other podcasts that I do and the things I like to talk about. And of course, please, please, please subscribe and listen to the Promenade Merchants podcast with my fantastic co-host, Miss Heather Kirby, where she and I talk about Star Trek and I occasionally make really bad jokes.
And you can find this show on Twitter at Weekly Trek and me at Alexander T. Perry. And if you enjoy the show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on your podcast player of choice. And please check out some of the other great shows on the Tricorder Transmissions. And if you like our shows, please also consider becoming a Patreon of Tricorder, which you can find at patreon.com/thetricordertransmissions. And lastly, if you're looking for Star Trek news on the internet, I hope you will turn to trekcore.com. Well, thank you, David. Thank you to all of my listeners. And until next week, live long and prosper.